Get connected with WFAN to talk about your favorite teams. The Fan, always live on the free Odyssey app.
It's game day. That's right. Let's go. 406 on the Fan on this Tuesday morning. McMonagle here with you. I got you for another hour as we take your calls to 888-808-1019. Fleegs on the other side. And now it's we wake up to another game. Every night it's either previewing or reacting to. I can't get enough of this Knick playoff run. And it continues. As we thought for a while there, it was over. We thought it was over, down 20 in Game 3, getting blown out in Indiana. To go down 3-0 in the series, and that would have been it. That would have been kaputz. That would have been the end of it all. That would have been a very devastating loss after an improbable win against the Celtics, only to fall to a team that we felt they can compete with, a team we felt they were better than, a team they were favored to beat, a team with they were playing with home court advantage against. And instead of worrying about where the hell we wanted to ship Karl-Anthony Towns, that bum, instead of wondering whether or not we should fire Tibbs at the end of the series, instead of all that, Tibbs decides to roll with the bench. And Karl-Anthony Towns decides to take over in the fourth quarter as the Knicks found themselves down 20 points earlier in the game and down 10 heading into the fourth quarter, a fourth quarter where prior to that fourth quarter, Karl-Anthony Towns had scored 4 points in the game. And they sent him out there without Brunson because Brunson was in foul trouble. And Karl-Anthony Towns and Josh Hart and a collection of players outside of that, like Shamet and Wright, guys we haven't seen pretty much all postseason. Karl-Anthony Towns decides to take over the game, hits big threes, gets to the basket, dunks and one, and absolutely dominates as their defense and their matchups with the bench, with Wright and Shamet, as I mentioned, cause problems and confusion for the Pacers. They go quiet down the stretch of the game, and the Knicks rally from behind 20 early on in the game, 10 in the fourth quarter, to take a 106-100 win in Game 3 and thrust themselves right back into this series. And for two guys, we were cursing. Like, you could sense it. You could feel it from the fan base. You could sense it really with Karl-Anthony Towns from the moment they traded for him. Soft. 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 Doesn't show up in big games. We've seen it in Minnesota. Not the right guy. Not the right guy to push all the chips in for. Not the right guy. We've sensed this coming. The Detroit series, where the hell is he? He's disappeared. He's imaginary. I can't find him. The Celtics series, not enough from him. This game, game number three, Shaq making fun of him at the half, saying if he was my teammate, I'd punch him in the face for the shot selection. 4 points heading into the fourth quarter. Tibbs, the entire fan base, the minutes police, everyone who believes there is a limit to Thibodeau-run teams. We've seen it with Chicago. We've seen it with Minnesota. There's a limit. There's only so much and so far he can take you. He doesn't make offensive adjustments. He doesn't play his bench. He doesn't trust his team. And both of those guys go out of what we perceive as their character. Tibbs runs the bench. Tibbs leaves Brunson on the bench with foul trouble and trusts Karl-Anthony Towns to be the offensive force, run the offense through him with their season on the line, with their lives on the line. They've got Wright out there. They've got Shamet out there. And they left Brunson on the bench and said, go get him, big fella. And he did. One of the more remarkable runs there for Karl-Anthony Towns. It's the kind of wins that make you legends if they can follow it up tonight. And that's what I want to see, and that's what I'm curious about. Was that a fluke? Was that something that just caught the Pacers off guard, or did Tibbs and Karl-Anthony Towns, really, I know Karl-Anthony Towns thing isn't a necessarily matchup thing. It's just a matter or a confusion thing. It's more of, can he be that player? Can he be that dominant? Can he get to the basket at will the way he did in the fourth quarter? Can he hit those three-pointers? And Tibbs, did we find something with playing the bench? Is there an advantage? Are they a better defensive team? Did they cause problems for the Pacers? Are there answers in what we saw on Sunday night? Or was it just a one-off? Was it just another team that the Knicks suddenly awake against when they're down 20 points, went on a run? The Pacers, like so many other teams we've seen, whether it be the Knicks, whether it be the Celtics, whether it be the Cavs or Milwaukee, you know, falling apart at the end of these games as teams that they had beat make these runs. Is it just typical NBA playoffs, or was there something to be found and learned from in that game Sunday night? And can Karl Anthony Towns, whose MO is show up one night, disappear the next, hasn't really put together dominant performances, hasn't strung them together, can he be who the Knicks need him to be and show up tonight? And sure, you know, Brunson's going to have his game. I think he played terribly in game number three. He's the only Knick player with a minus for the entire game. Got into foul trouble again. Made a couple plays at the very end of the fourth quarter, really once Karl Anthony Towns had, you know, brought them back from the dead. But obviously we all expect Brunson to not have two bad games in a row. We expect Brunson to show up. We've seen all the stuff. We know how great he is. We know how much we love him. I'm not trying to brush it aside. I don't have questions about it. I know what he's going to do. I know what he's capable of. I know how many 40-point playoff games I've seen him have. But can we get the same Karl Anthony Towns? And is that the best way to go about things? Is that the best way to handle the fourth quarter? Is that the best way to handle the start of the game? How quickly does he go to this 9-man rotation? How quickly does Tibbs pull out the reserves? What do they start Hart, or do they continue with what they did in game three and go with Mitch Robinson in the starting lineup? So many questions. Tonight is a obviously huge game. The difference between 2-2 heading back to the Garden for a Game 5 tied up at 2 or being down 3-1 is obviously enormous. But more than that, have the Knicks found something that can give them a real edge in this game and a real edge in this series? Or are we just going to see the same back-and-forth nature of runs and who knows who's going to show up? And are the Knicks going to play like the team that they do whenever their backs are against the wall, whenever they're desperate? Or are they going to come out with some lack of urgency that they've shown in multiple spots? I don't know who's going to show up. I don't know what Nick team is going to show up. I don't know what this game is going to look like, but I know I can't wait for it to start. 888-808-1019. We got you for another 45 minutes or so. Let's take your calls on the Knicks. I did talk plenty of Yankees there in that 3 o'clock hour, but we will take your calls on either right now as we have hit Memorial Day weekend, or at least now past it, should I say. Which is the first real spot where you take a look at where you are as a team, what you're good at, what you're bad at, where your flaws are, where you start to think of maybe addressing issues with the team come the trade deadline, and of course where you are in the standings for the first real time this year. And the Mets are a game and a half back. The Phillies have the best record in baseball, but obviously the Mets are 11 games over 500 and have now turned it around after a very small little lull in the season, where they lost back-to-back series to the Yankees and Red Sox, a huge series win against the Dodgers, and of course taking game one of the set against the White Sox. And the Yankees right now are playing as good as any team in baseball. 14 of their last 19. They have the best run differential in the game, and they have the biggest division lead in all of baseball. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Tony in Montreal. What's up, Tony?
How you doing, C-Mac?
Good. How are you,
Thanks
brother?
Thanks for taking it. I'm good. Thanks for taking my call. You know, impatience is the ruination of pretty much everything in society, including baseball teams, yep, sports teams, and franchises. And, yep, you know, I listened to Volpe, and, I love that guy. He's a homegrown kid, and, you know, he's loyal to the Yankee brand. I think he's going to be okay, and I think you're right. He'll get better. You know, you can't compare him to an icon like Jeter. And you can also, you know, you can go back and, you know, you have Rizzuto that played that position, if I recall well. Yeah. You know, you have great Yankee shortstops, but what's wrong with this kid? This kid, I watched him on the weekend. He was great. I mean, he can field the ball. And Okay, I don't know if he's not a Gold Glover, but he's great. I love him. Okay, I just want another thing. I was listening to you guys on.
Good.
Yeah, go ahead.
No,
sorry.
I was just gonna say a lot of the fan base doesn't agree with you. So,
I like the kid. He's an Italian kid. I'm gonna pull for an Italian kid. Okay.
Why not?
I'm an Italian dude from Montreal. I love this guy anyway. Listen, but I love all the Yankees. I don't care where they're from. You know, as long
that's
as they can
right.
hit, like you said. You know, like you talk about Judge, a guy that's hovering around 400, and you know, it's like just like an incredible to watch that happen right now, and you're alive to see it. That's what you're right about. I just want to say another thing. I was listening to you guys. You know, I'm not a big basketball guy, but I like basketball. I like watching it. Because the hockey was on earlier, I watched the full game of the Knicks. You know, I saw them, they were down by 20. I'm like, oh, okay, that's okay. Basketball down by 20, what's that? It's a couple of baskets, couple of three-pointers, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm hearing guys on your own station, your own host saying, the Knicks are a pile of steaming, blah, blah, blah. Not saying, obviously, what they were thinking. And they turned off the station. I watched the whole game. It was highly entertaining. And as they got closer and closer and closer, again, you see how a team can play. And you were mentioning some play. Carl Anthony was amazing, and Brunson was amazing. And, you know, like, that game, particularly when they came back on the piece, I was like looking at Siakam's face. He had fear in his eyes, man. Yes, he's a great player, and he was great for Toronto. But you know, he looked like he was scared.
Yeah, anyway, and thank you for the call, Tony. I wanted to get into some other calls. I appreciate it. Well, listen, Siakam had a great game number two, not so good in game one. They came back and won. As far as like the other host or whatever, that's just not, if you're talking about the guys who were on during the game, I can tell you from my chair watching the game, I was saying the same crap about this Knicks team. It was an embarrassing effort. They were getting blown out. Like I've been going on and on and on about how I trust this team. I trust them. They're going to show up in a big spot. They've earned that. I trust them. They've earned that trust. Down 20 in desperation mode was not what I was expecting. So I was saying the same thing. I thought the series was done. I'm not ashamed to say it. I thought the series was done. I thought they were going to down 20 in the way it was going. And it just felt like they had no answers. The 20 point lead, I don't think went as deep into the game as it did in the first two Celtics games. But I will tell you, I think that one was just as improbable as any of them. I think you could argue I felt better in certainly game two of the Celtics because they already done it in game one. Like, and plus they were up 1-0 in the series, so I didn't have that same urgency or that same feel of it, but. Like, to me, that was as improbable. When they go on that run and make it 55-35, game's over. They looked like a complete mess. It looked like game one did to them what we feared it would do. Because I know they played fairly well, took a lead into the half of game two, but they just didn't look right. Second half was what we all saw. Like, it was a disappointing game number two. And then the start of game number three, I thought for sure they'd come out with their hair on fire because they needed it, and it just wasn't there. And they're down 20 points, and that place is going nuts. I thought that series was over. And then they pulled it out again. They do what they do, man. It's crazy. They wait till they're – I mean, that you want to talk about the epitome of desperation. Down 2-0, down 20 points in game three. I mean, that's – you're on life support. Down 10 heading into the fourth quarter. You're on life support. And Carl Anthony Towns was there, man. That's it. He's got to come out and stamp it. Don't get me wrong. But that's if they do. If they come back and win this series, that's one of the all-time moments for a New York Knick. I don't know how you could say otherwise. If they come back and win this series, they're dead, man. This is all. It's over. Their best players on the bench with foul trouble. They're resorting to playing, you know, nine guys, which Tibbs doesn't do. Like, they're playing guys off the bench we haven't seen all postseason, let alone this series. They're done. And Karl-Anthony Towns just decides they're not. That's one of the, I'm hitting threes, getting to the basket, no look passes. Like, he did everything. If the Knicks come back and win this series, that performance in the fourth quarter the other night is one of the all-time Knick performances ever. It just is. Might not be Clyde's game seven, you know, but it's up. It's a Eastern Conference Finals, first one in 25 years, about to be dead, and he pulls them out of the fire, and they come back and win the series. That is an all-time moment, and that's what I'd be telling them. That's what I'd be telling Karl Anthony Towns. Let's go out and win this freaking thing. You're a hero. Stuart in Brooklyn. What's up, Stu?
You're like Meatloaf said. You took the words right out of my mouth.
I would finish the Meatloaf line, but I'll stay away.
Oh, okay. Chris, yes. That was Omen. But what do they have to wait until they get down?
I don't know why they have to wait, Stu. If I knew that, I'd tell them not to do it. I don't know why they're waiting until they're down 20. I don't know why they're waiting until they're desperate. I don't know why they can't match the intensity of the team until their lives are on the line. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's nice to see that he's finally trusting the bench a little bit more.
Yeah.
Rotating. I mean, he wasn't doing that all year. He ran them guys down into the ground, and now he finally realizes, well, I've got to play these guys a little bit more because I might just need them. And he does need them. Indiana throws out, what, 10, 11 guys?
Yeah.
They could throw out.
I mean, listen, there's no doubt, Stu. It was a dynamic we talked about heading into the series, how they were going to roll 9, 10 deep. They were going to try and push the pace, and that's a tough thing to keep up with all series long. And it's part of the reason why I was so furious about game number one, because I felt like they played at that pace, and they had the game won. It was one of those games, because in a series like this, it's very... I just expect when it's two evenly matched teams, I don't expect one team to have the better of it or play the way they want to play and have the series and dictate the style of play of the game over and over again in a series. It's hard. And I thought like, as Charles Barkley said, like Charles Barkley was saying at half of game one, this is the kind of game Indiana wants to play. They want to play fast-paced. They want to go up and down the court. They want to score a ton of points. And even though they're losing, and even if they lose this game, this is a good sign for the Pacers, because if they continue to play this series like that, there's no way the Knicks can keep up for a seven-game series. Like, that was his point. I understood it. It made sense. But my point was, I guess, but just because they're playing the game this way tonight doesn't mean the Knicks are going to allow them to play this game every time. It doesn't mean the Pacers are going to be good enough to play this style of basketball. I was taking it as a major positive, because this is one of the games of a series where the Pacers are playing the way they want to play. They are dictating the style of play. It is an up-and-down kind of feel of basketball. And the Knicks are still winning the game. They're up 14 points with 2.5 minutes left. I took that as a major positive, not as some look like, obviously it would be like, hey, you can't play the series this entire way. Yeah, okay. How many series go the same way every game? And that's what happened in game two. Game two was a typical game where it was the first half kind of went the Knicks' way, and then the second half, the Pacers went on a run. That's going to happen. That's what killed them about losing game one. Game two is a inevitable kind of game that'll happen in a series. Game one's the killer because you had that one. So, like, that's what made it so frustrating. But we talked about the idea of how fast-paced they were going to try and play it, and how deeper and deeper you get into the series, how hard it's going to be to stick to 5, 6, 7 guys. So he opened it up just at the right time, went to the bench just at the right time, and Karl Anthony Towns and a bunch of role players went out there and dominated the fourth quarter. It was beautiful to watch. And Tibbs deserves credit, and Karl Anthony Towns deserves credit. And we'll see. They got to do it again tonight, and I'm fascinated to see if and when how early he goes to the bench, and if this is the strategy to keep guys fresh, maybe keep them out of foul trouble. Because if they're going to play like that and play defensively the way they played in this game, you know, Shamet and Wright, it is a key advantage for the Knicks. It is something that will benefit them, not only with their play and the defense they provide, but the rest and helping keep them out of foul trouble for the Stars so they could be there in the fourth quarter.
Get the scuttlebutt on your favorite teams here on The Fan.
All right, 4:32. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Uh, 888-808-1019. Talking about a moment, I'm going to ask Fleegs if he can find it. A moment on the broadcast where I was at a party live. We're in a backyard party. Guys, my buddy Chris from the neighborhood has a great setup in the backyard. Bar, yeah, outdoor pizza makers making pizza for the kids. And we were watching it outside, the Knick game, obviously, Sunday night. And for most of the game, I was, you know, they were playing music for the kids and stuff. But then crunch time, I made them just play the television. And maybe it was earlier in the game, I don't remember. But there was a moment, I was sitting there with my son watching the game. And I just couldn't believe what I heard. And I was hysterical laughing, and he was like, "What, Dad?" I'm like, "Nothing. I can't tell you why I'm laughing. I'm not going to explain this to you." But it was one of the more just laugh out loud moments I've ever had watching an NBA game. So we'll get to that in a little bit. 888-808-1019. Let's get to limo driver Ed. What's up, Ed?
Hey, buddy. Good morning, Chris. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning,
hey,
to you, sir.
All righty. You know, years ago, you would never be able to come back if you was down 20 points to the defense of the ninth.
Yeah,
you know, you had Pistons, you had the Knicks. You know, it has got to be asinine now that a team can come back.
Yeah.
Or you can be down this many points. And the defenses are just terrible. I mean, whatever happened to the day that you come down, you slow things down, and you run an offense? You got guys launching three.
No, I mean, that's the thing. The three is so much more dynamic and prevalent in today's game that it changes that. And then, I mean, yeah, the idea, you know, the NBA playoffs, as great as and exciting as it's been, and they've had a great run here, it hasn't helped any playing into the, you know, the narrative or the cliche of all you have to do is turn on the last 4 minutes of an NBA game and you got everything you need to know. Like, that's what it's been. I mean, that's what it's been. Yeah, it doesn't matter what happens. It doesn't matter. They're down 20 in the first half. They're down 25 in the first half. Like, turn on the game 4 minutes left, and you're going to have a compelling game. Like, that's what it's been. It's crazy.
And that comes to turn around is that the other team don't – these teams are just not – like I said, it's even like with Towns. It's good he came through. But, you know, the thing is, he should be doing the dudes big. Man, you should be going to the hole every time. What are you doing? I mean, and Tibbs ain't got to tell you that. You should be able to know what you're doing, man.
I think he has. He hasn't been as successful at it as he was last night, or the Sunday night, rather. Like, he just wasn't. He's gone to the hole. How many times have we seen Karl-Anthony Towns go to the hole and then end up having, like, the ball being dribbled out in the other direction while he's on the floor complaining about no foul? Like, a million. He has gone to the basket. He has attempted to do what he did in the fourth quarter. He was unable to do it. He hasn't been successful around the rim. Certainly his three-point shot hasn't been there the way it was in the fourth quarter. Like, it's not like he hasn't tried. He's tried. He wasn't finishing around. He was just better. He was better. And, yeah, maybe he really took it upon himself to be the focal point of the offense. He hasn't done it as much in a stretch. Like, that was a legitimate 7-8 minutes close to it, where he was just, I'm taking over the game. So when I say he's gone to the basket, I think he has at times, but no, there hasn't been a lot of stretches of just like, okay, Cat, it's your game. Go take it to the hole on every possession. Go figure it out. Find the open man, hit your three-pointer, take it to the hole, whatever you want to do, go do it. We're going to put better defenders around you. We're going to try and limit their game, get some rebounds, which he got to. He had a bunch of rebounds in this game. Go out there and get rebounds and go figure it out offensively. And he did. But, yeah, the case could be made, where has this been at different times in the series? You could argue every time Brunson's off the floor and he's on it, why isn't this the offense? Because I think they are a different team when he's playing this way. And clearly that was the case in the fourth quarter. Gary in East Meadow. What's up, Gary?
Hey, Luke. So you were talking about how Judge isn't on the list of the great Yankees. So what I would ask you is this, and I don't want this to happen, even though I'm a fan, is if Judge had the same injury Mattingly had and had to stop playing tomorrow, is he past Mattingly in the Yankee pantheon?
I think he's past Mattingly in the Yankee pantheon right now. At least for me.
If he's going to play another game, you think he's past him?
I mean, he's a better player than Mattingly ever was, even Mattingly at his greatest. Even Mattingly at his greatest, which was top of the league. Don't get me wrong. He's one of the best players, if not the best player in the American League for a couple of years, won the MVP. Judge is surpassing what he did. And he never won a championship. Now, look, I caught the tail end of it. I caught the tail end of I never saw him at his best. So I caught the tail end of Don Mattingly. I loved him growing up and everything. And then what he did in 96, I get it. I know he holds a special place in the heart for a lot of Yankee fans, like you know, BT, that age group. I get it. And he was the one guy on a team that didn't win and didn't make the postseason despite having some 90-win seasons. So, like, I get it. But for me, I'm talking about he'll never be Jeter. He'll never be, you know, Ruth, Gehrig, DiMaggio, Mantle, Berra. He has to win to be beloved like those guys, or even for this generation, beloved like Bernie Williams, beloved like Paul O'Neill, full knowing that he's far better than those guys, but he's got to win championships, especially for like my age group now, where we have five championships in the bank. Like you need more if you want to be beloved like those guys. Not every single Yankee, not Don Mattingly. To me, he's already surpassed Don Mattingly.
All right, that's fair, because I'm saying Mattingly is probably the most beloved Yankee from people of your age, and that's why I was asking for your opinion.
Yeah, no, I get you. And again, I caught the tail end of it. I didn't experience him at his best, but I did see the 95 series, and that was incredible, the 95 ALDS. But yeah, to me, I don't know what Mattingly did that Judge has not. He's won more MVPs. He's a far better player. He's doing it at a time where I believe it's harder to do it. So, I mean, he's the captain. He's done everything. He's done everything. Carried the team. He hit 62 home runs. He's breaking records. Like, he's on pace to win the Triple Crown this year. Like, I don't know what, other than the expectations are different, other than now we've all seen the dynasty, and you better freaking win, otherwise you're a loser, where I guess Mattingly wasn't held to that same standard. But, yeah, for me, I'm talking about Jeter. I'm talking about Bernie Williams. I'm talking about Andy Pettit. I'm talking about these beloved Yankees who clearly, even Derek Jeter, every name I just mentioned, Aaron Judge is a far better baseball player. But you won't be, like, I can call, my point was, I can still call him the best right-handed hitter I've ever seen. He doesn't have to win a World Series. He doesn't have to go back to another World Series. He could still be a subpar postseason player. I know a lot of people differ on that. He won't be beloved. But what I see from him over the last 4 years of the 162, greatest right-handed hitter I've ever seen. It's already enough for me to kind of say that. But he won't be Jeter. He won't be Mo. He won't be these beloved guys who, you know, we have these memories with, these championship parades with. Like, he'll just feel different. He'll be the great player and not the same level Yankee. Ray in the Bronx. What's up, Ray?
Chris McMonagle. How you doing,
Hi,
man?
Hi, Ray. That's me.
That's it. First of all, I want to talk about Pete Alonso, but real quick, Nick should definitely be up 2-1, and Julius Randle laid a 5-point egg tonight.
Yeah, he did. That's kind of his MO too, but he's had some really good moments in this postseason. Last night was not one of them, and they are down now 3-1. So, look, I don't think it was ever going to happen with him. I don't know if it's ever going to happen with Cat, and I don't know if we're ever going to feel that trade was worth it. Because we never saw that season, that team come to fruition. We never had them all healthy at the same time. Because if we did, let's be honest, they'd probably be in an Eastern Conference Finals last year. I don't know if they would have made it further than that, but I think they would have beat the Pacers. But we never got to see it, so it's always just remember how good they were in January. And so we'll always love that team, but I don't think they were going to go anywhere with Randall. And we'll see if it works with Kat. But
I agree with that.
If they win this series, to me, that's legendary status, what he did in Game 3.
Absolutely. Now, first of all, I like Pete Alonso.
Okay.
But you want to talk about the mental block, also known as the yips, when it comes to throwing the ball accurately.
Yeah.
It's there, man. I remember Steve Sachs had it. Mackie Sasser had it. Chuck Knoblauch had to go from playing second base to playing the outfield because of the mental block.
Yep.
Even Jason Giambi admitted to having it. Now, more recently, Pete Alonso against our Yankees, when he airmailed it home, and the Mets ended up losing 8-2.
Mm-hmm.
And today, two great stops on hard ground balls, but the two throws were behind the pitchers. They had to stretch awkwardly to recover.
Yeah.
Pete has a throwing problem, clearly. Chris, I'd like to know your take on that.
My take on it, I think, Keith Hernandez said it. So he's got, it's in his head a little bit, that throw to the pitcher specifically. I know he had the bad throw to home plate against the Yankees. I haven't noticed it as much on plays around the infield. The throws home, even turning a double play and throwing it to second. I mean, are there the offhand, here or there bad throws? Sure. And clearly that was a miserable one against the Yankees. But he made one, I think, in today's game or one of the games recently. I think it was today's game. He came home and got the force out. Yesterday's game, rather. I haven't noticed a problem just in throws in general. The moving target of the pitcher to first base is without question an issue. It's without question an issue. It's been one for a while. He's kind of had an issue with it for a while. It is definitely in his head. There's no, you want to call it the yips, you want to call it whatever you want to call it. Before he makes that throw, there is no question in Pete Alonso's head, he says to himself, don't screw this up. There is no doubt. That is going through his mind every time he throws it to the first, every time he throws it to the pitcher covering first base. I have no doubt in his mind, he's like, oh, please don't screw this up. That's just where he's at with it. Now, he still made some plays. We'll find out if it comes back to bite them in a big spot, but it's not worth anything. He's got to try and fix it. He's got to work on it. He's got to keep doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it well. Raised out in Queens. So, I mean, I don't know what to say other than that, because I definitely think you're right. There's something to it. Not so much every throw, but that throw to the pitcher covering first base without question is an issue for Pete. And it's odd. And honestly, the Subway Series and then into Boston, I thought he was playing the best first base of his career. Right? He's always had the good scoop numbers. I've even poo-pooed a little bit. People are like, oh, the scoop numbers. I was like, I never heard of the scoop numbers. All of a sudden, we're trying to justify Pete Alonso's contract, and people are giving me scoop numbers. Never heard scoop numbers. But there's no doubt he's been good around the base, and this year particularly good. But even his range, I thought he's been as good a defensive first baseman as he's ever been, and one of the better ones in the league. And then the Yankee series, and then even the Boston series, a couple balls down the line that I thought he was getting to prior. His defense has kind of been shaky a little bit. Obviously, it's a somewhat of an issue for the Mets. Today, made some great plays. What's his name at second base? McNeil had a couple of really sparklers. We've seen Beatty really play a good third base, although he let one get under his glove the other night. But still, he's been great. Center field, lack of hitting, but has been very good defensively. Even Nimmo, hobbling out there a little bit, has made good plays in the corner, made good plays up against the wall. But third base has been a real defense, and the catchers are controlling the run game like crazy. So while I say there's a defensive issue, Soto's not great in right field, although he hasn't hurt them, and he's made some good plays. But Vientos at third has really been bad. And overall, the defense, Lindor's made more errors this year, hasn't been quite as good defensively, although I think he's a good defensive player. But occasional errors here or there that have cost the Mets. Third base has been an issue with Vientos. Pete Alonso at first base, after what I thought was off to a really great start, has kind of slowed down defensively. So they have a little bit of a defensive issue with them in general. But I think the Vientos situation is going to be really interesting because Beatty's killing it. He's coming up with clutch hits, easy opposite field power. He's really coming into his own. And if he's going to turn into the player he's been in AAA, or the player they believed him to be, he was a more highly touted prospect. He's killing it. Anytime, you know, he got into AAA, if he can find confidence in himself defensively, offensively, he's a better player than Vientos. I know that's crazy to say with the year Vientos had, but he's showing the capability of doing that and being a more well-rounded player. And if they're going to be even close offensively, it's not close defensively. So we'll see if there's a way to, you know, he's going to, a lot of Vientos at DH.
Catch all the play-by-play with Susan Waldman and Dave Sims on the home of Yankees radio, The Fan.
Bump, bump. All right, 4:54. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. So I mentioned hearing something on the broadcast the other night, Sunday night. I'm sitting there again. I'm at a party. The music's kind of overplaying the television sound at times, and I'm sitting there watching it with my son, bunch of other people talking to me about God knows what. And so we're watching the game, and then all of a sudden, I hear one of them. I don't know what they're talking about prior. I don't know what's going on, but all I know is I hear Kevin Harlan say what I never thought I would hear uttered on a basketball broadcast. It was unbelievable. And then I didn't know what to say to my son. So here, this is what, out of nowhere, you guys all heard it. You remember it. I cannot believe. I almost want to hear the clip just to go back and listen to the context. All right, so let me hear the whole context of this, because this was a moment I had to, like, just pretend I didn't hear with a bunch of kids watching the game on a Memorial Day weekend.
Comes up. Oh, look out. He comes up. Toppin. And Toppin's
that's what I'm
forward.
Talking about. Good action right there.
I'm wet. I'm dirty. Oh, my. Stuff all over the place, and here comes Brunson again. Sets up. Three. No. Rebound. Robinson held and fouled.
Hold on. Are you okay, Mr. Harlan?
Don't worry about it.
I'm wet. I'm dirty. You got to understand, again, I'm assuming he spilled something on himself. Like, I think that's the way, now listening to it again, the way he said,
I'm wet. I'm dirty.
I'm wet. I'm dirty. I'm unclean.
Stuff all over the place, and here comes.
Yeah, I guess he knocks stuff all over the place. I'm wet. I'm dirty.
Wet. I'm dirty.
It was like one of those moments where, like, you ever, like, been somewhere where it's, like, noisy and you're having a conversation, then you yell something, I don't know, either slightly inappropriate or could be taken out of context right as the music stops, or right as, you know, everyone quiets down and you say something and everyone just, like, stares at you. That's what it was. Like, out of nowhere, I just heard, I'm wet! I'm dirty!
I'm wet! I'm dirty!
What the hell? That was weird. Leads us right into Brett in Long Island. What's up, Brett? How are you?
Chris, stop the bullcrap. Modern-day Anthony Volpe's trash. Mm-hmm. Aaron Judge is historically horrible in the postseason. It should be benched. As far as the Knicks, you're right about Brunson. You know what he's going to give you night in, night out. Mikal Bridges has been consistent, our best in-space defender. Mm-hmm. Mitchell Robinson is our boards guy, shoots 25%. The problem I have, and Hart's, you know, bloody, and, you know, he's going to die for rebounds. The problem I have is looking at all the series in the playoff, both series. What happens? Oh, gee. Yeah. I had two people text me. He looks drunk. Well, he disappears. Like, and he plays a lot of minutes.
Yeah.
Like, we know tonight somebody will be a little off, but guess what? Three other guys will pick up. OG has gotten 5 points. Cost us. I know you can look at one thing, but he cost us that game. He hits two free throws. You're up by four. You win the game. The inbound pass from Brunson that last game, we didn't talk about it. He bobbled it, and they got it. He cost us that game. You know what I mean? He's been really bad.
I'm not saying he hasn't been, bred. I don't know if he can call. He started the run that put them up 17. Yeah, he missed one foul shot. So did Karl Anthony Towns. Down the stretch of that game, there's a lot of reasons that lost in that game. I'm not hanging that one on OG. Richie, I'm sorry we didn't get to you. I try and call him tomorrow. I appreciate you, man. I don't think I can hang it. Listen, he's got to be better offensively. But again, like, he's a guy who's really opened up offensively when Brunson wasn't around. The offense has kind of got to go through him right now. His offense, his contribution to the offense is going to be hitting the occasional open three if he gets it. Like, that's about it. But I don't disagree. He's played poorly. He picked up his defensive intensity last game, had the big block. But they need more from him. They need more from everybody. Thank you guys for calling. Thank you for listening. Big game tonight. Thanks to Fleas on the other side. Big game. We got the warm-up show coming up. Stick with the Fan all day as we get you ready for game number 4, Knicks-Pacers. Enjoy the game. I'll catch you after the Yankees tomorrow. Bye-bye. 101.9 FM. WFAN.